introduce Attorney John Runyon. Mr. Fahim.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you. And John, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
Well, I didn't throw my back out shoveling snow this morning, so I guess I'm doing pretty well. Thank you for asking.
Okay. How many inches did you guys get back in Hoffman Estates where you are?
Well, I think we got about 3. I mean, it just stopped snowing about maybe an hour ago. So I figure about 3. I'm going to go shovel everything else at the end of the day.
Okay, sounds good. And as long as you don't slip and fall, you should be fine. So what happens if you do slip and fall? Do you sue yourself?
Well, you know, the old adage, a person that represents himself as a fool for an attorney. So no, I don't think I will. I will sue myself. I'll get an attorney that knows how to sue me.
So you're going to find an attorney who knows how to sue you and sue yourself.
Yeah, that's how it's going to be. I mean, hey, you know, it's just negligence.
What a country we live in. What a country we live in. But hey, that's what makes this such a great country to live in, right? I mean, we know as long as we have some knowledge about what our rights are, we can go ahead and, you know, we can find a way to enforce our rights. Speaking of rights, John, I know that you had been to school as an attorney, but before that, you were working with the police department. So how was that? I mean, how did that turning point in your life come about? Why did you decide to become a police officer?
Well, I grew up in California, and I was a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout out there back in the 60s. And then my mom and I moved back here to Illinois, and she discovered an Explorer Scout troop at the Buffalo Grove Police Department that the chief was organizing. And she asked me if I wanted to be involved. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I was interested. And, you know, the thing about it was that once I got involved in the world of law enforcement and being with these men, and please don't take it the wrong way, back in 71 at Buffalo Grove, there were no women police officers at that time. Yeah. And it was all men, and a lot of them were veterans, and it just got into my blood very quickly, and I made the decision that this is what I wanted to do.
Okay, so the first day at work after you finished your training, now, do they have any kind of a hazing ritual in the police department also when you join the first day?
Well, you get hazed every day. You're the rookie, you're the newbie, you're the go for coffee guy. Go get that report in the third bin. Go wash the car guy. Huh. You're the everybody's go to get something guy. even when you're on the street with your field training officer, hey Rook, go pull the door on that business, make sure that it's locked, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, boss.
Okay. Uh-huh. Folks, you are listening to the Turning Point podcast, and my guest on the podcast today is Attorney John Runyon, who started off his life not as an attorney, but as a police officer, and then turned his life around and became an attorney. Again, the whole thing is to protect our rights and our civil liberties, I guess. So, John, again, coming back to your days as a police officer, what were some of the challenges that you faced out on the street? And then we'll talk about challenges back in the station house.
The challenges were an everyday thing. Every call, obviously, even as simple as a cat in a tree, they all have their unique challenges. And the police officer, he's trained to try and come into a situation, assess the situation, and craft some kind of remedy, whether it be, you know, going to a domestic relations call where the couple are vehemently arguing about something, whether it be going to a call where it's a car accident and people are injured. The officer, like myself, we're all trained to get to the scene, make assessments, make decisions, and then act on the decisions that you're making. So the real reality is every day was a challenge. Every day was a learning experience because no 2 days were ever the same.
So when was this? When did you get started in the police department? What year was that?
I joined the Hanover Park Police Department on May the 5th, 1979.
So 1979. Now, compared to the social situations in those days, when you compare it to what we see today, what kind of changes do you see as far as policing is concerned, police response to situation is concerned, we as a society are concerned? What changes have you seen?
Well, I think one of the major changes that we're seeing in the focus of police work today is trying to get the police officer to understand and empathize what the person that's in front of him is going through, but at the same time, attempting to do his job, do his duty with the facts that are given to him at the time of his arrival. So we have gone from heavily into training as far as physical threats and that kind of thing. Now it's more heavily into training about handling these volatile situations involving people, but trying to craft an answer that is going to work for everybody, which in some situations is just not possible. But that's what the police officer today is really, as far as I see, that's what the police officer is today has to do. He has to still assess the situation.
So the biggest challenges in those days, I mean, were they drug related? Were they, guns related? What was the biggest challenge as far as the threat to a police officer's life was concerned?
Well, you know, back at that time, a lot of it was gun related in our community. Then it did become drug related. Then it became gang related. And those were the things that were very concerning to all of us at the time, because obviously you had people with guns that were firing the guns. You had the people that were selling and buying drugs. Then the gangs came into the community, and that was a whole new idea for us that we had to deal with. And a lot of times the gang members were juveniles, so it made it even harder.
Okay, sounds good. And thank you for sharing, John. And folks, my guest on the podcast tonight is John Runyon, who is an attorney, started out his career as a police officer. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back after this.
Solar Power Midwest here to ask you a question. How many times have you been scared to open up your electric bill and only to be shocked even more as the cost of electricity keep going up? Well, guess what? As one of our customers said, he and his wife were scared to open up their bills. Then they hired us to install solar. And now they love it because they only pay $14 a month hookup fee to their electric company. You have, for the first time, your choice to own your own electric power plant at your home or business. With Solar Power Midwest, we've been in business since 2001, making customers happy all over Illinois, as we are based in Illinois and here to help. All our representatives are ready for your call to 844-49-SOLAR. Again, that's 1-844-49-SOLAR, or you can check out our website at solarpowermidwest.com. We're here to help and show you how solar can enhance your life forever.
You are listening to The Turning Point Podcast, and you can check out our website at theturningpointpodcast.com. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail or ask a question of a future guest, the phone number is 312-866-7174. Or if you have a suggestion on who may be a very interesting person to be a guest on our podcast, please leave that information as well. Or you can leave us a message on our website as well, theturningpointpodcast.com.
Blue Fathoms Television, a new entertainment venue, is located on the Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, and Android TV. Blue Fathoms TV is the place for vintage movies, television shows, and cartoons from a bygone era. You can also find us on the internet at www.blue6tv.com and on Facebook at Blue Fathoms Television. Enjoy Academy Award-winning films featuring legendary actors. So, please stop by and catch our programming, as we are always updating. Blue Fathoms Television, on the Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, and Android TV platforms.
Welcome back to the Turning Point Podcast. Our guest tonight is attorney John Runyon.
Okay, John, let's get back to what we were discussing. The challenges that a police officer faced in the 1970s, how do they compare to the challenges that we are facing now? Especially, I hear a lot of people out there blaming the police now for any action that they take. I mean, the recent issues that we are seeing as defund the police and all of that. How much sense does it make when you hear things like that as a former police officer?
You know, Muhammad, I have to say that it really hurts me as a police officer to hear the idea that we're going to defund the police, that we're going to reduce amount of manpower on the street. And I use manpower as just a general term, so which does consist of women officers just as well. But the whole idea of defunding the police, I think is the wrong way to think of this, because if we don't have enough officers on the street, you're not going to be able to assist the public that you're charged to protect. If I remember correctly, the Illinois Chiefs of Police says there should be one police officer for every 500 on the population. And then the FBI says it should be one for every 1,000 population. And I may have those numbers reversed, so hopefully you will not get a whole bunch of emails saying that I had it reversed. So, but the real reality is that you have to have enough manpower on the street to handle the calls that come in. And there may be days where police officers are handling calls that don't require a secondary backup or a third police officer coming in as backup. And then there's other days where the calls are coming in and every call requires a backup for one police officer. And very quickly, all of a sudden, you have all of your police officers occupied and the calls are still coming in. So this idea to defund the police, one of the first things that you think about is the loss of manpower. And that is not the way to go.
But John, don't you think that most at least some of the duties that the police officers are called upon to perform can be better performed by people who are trained in other aspects of psychology. For example, you know, not every police officer goes into a situation that he's really trained for, especially when you're dealing with some of the current mental health issues. And we see a lot of, I was reading a study recently that at least, you know, a quarter of us, one out of four people in the country have some kind of psychological issues, and they are continuing to grow because of the current situation we are in. So is it, you know, is it a good idea to expect our police to go for every situation?
Well, the problem is that when you dial 911, you're directed to the police department, and the procedure is to send a police officer. Now, as far as the mental health issue goes, I agree. I mean, you're not a psychologist, but you have to act like one. You're not a doctor, but you get to an accident scene and you all of a sudden have to try and act like one. Hanover Park, we used to have walkaways from Elgin State Mental Health Facility, and they would get onto the train out in Elgin, and the train would get to our stop. And by then the conductors had realized that they had walkaways from Elgin State on board, and they would help them off the train. And then we would get a call from the railroad saying that we just dropped a couple passengers from Elgin State off, and it's your problem now. And we would have to call Elgin State, and we would have to transport these people back. They had various, Elgin State had various programs where they were having nonviolent people living in housing in town. So mm-hmm. we had to learn who they were, because we never heard about this program until, you know, we got calls. So the idea of having psychologists and so on and so forth, I absolutely agree. I think to an nth degree, every police department now employs a psychologist or a sociologist, a counselor, to help people that are in crisis once we hand them off. Do I think that it's wise to send a psychologist instead of a police officer to a domestic violence call? Absolutely not. The two worst calls that police officers invariably say are going to be traffic stops, because we don't know what we're going to get when we stop that car, and domestic violence, because we just don't know what's going on with the dynamics inside that house at that moment. I've had butcher knives pulled on me in domestic violence cases. I've gone to domestic violence cases where people have been stabbed, and, you know, the person that was the actual offender, he was still holding the knife. We have wrestled people to the ground and placed them under arrest because of the domestic violence laws that are now in place. When I first started, there were no domestic violence laws whatsoever. And we would have to plead with the victim to sign a complaint and have the offender arrested. And a lot of times they wouldn't do it. And it was very tough policing until the domestic violence laws actually gave us tools that we could utilize. And then we, you know, as a police department across the nation, these departments have expanded with the sociologists and the psychologists to give people assistance after the moment. So, do I think they belong in police work? Absolutely. Do I think that they should be the ones that are going to the domestic violence calls that are coming in without any kind of training as far as how to defuse a situation quickly? Mm-hmm. I don't believe they should be there.
Well, I think, again, we come back to the issue of when people start demanding defund the police. My position on that has always been, no, we don't need to defund the police. In fact, we need to put more money into the police department. I mean, you know, that's the line of separation between the lawful and the unlawful in the society we live in. And I think we need to have better policing. That means better trained police officers and better compensated police officers also. You know, it's you're putting your life on the line every single day that you put on your uniform and sit in that squad car and leave your family. You don't know you're going to come back home that day, right?
That's always a very correct thing, and it's very sad. You leave your wife, you leave your husband, you leave your family, and you make sure that you leave and you give them all a kiss and tell them that you love them, and by the grace of God, you come home at the end of the day. And it may sound very corny to hear that, but I've had my own issues where I nearly did not make it home at the end of the day at the police as a police officer. So it's a real issue that all families of police officers have to understand. And a lot of people, they can't do that. They just can't do it.
Folks, on the Turning Point podcast tonight, my guest is Attorney John Runyon, who started off as a police officer and then retired as a police sergeant and decided to continue the work that he was doing in law enforcement by going to law school. And we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the lawyer side of John Runyon's of his life.
This is the Turning Point podcast. If you'd like to leave us a message, our number is 312-866-7174. That's 312-866-7174. You can leave a message on our website, theturningpointpodcast.com. We'll be back after this break.
Solar Power Midwest here to ask you a question. How many times have you been scared to open up your electric bill and only to be shocked even more as the cost of electricity keep going up? Well, guess what? As one of our customers said, he and his wife were scared to open up their bills. Then they hired us to install solar. And now they love it because they only pay $14 a month hookup fee to their electric company. You have, for the first time, your choice to own your own electric power plant at your home or business. With Solar Power Midwest, we've been in business since 2001, making customers happy all over Illinois as we are based in Illinois and here to help. All our representatives are ready for your call to 844-49-SOLAR. Again, that's 1-844-49-SOLAR. Or you can check out our website at solarpowermidwest.com. We're here to help and show you how solar can enhance your life forever.
Blue Fathoms Television, a new entertainment venue, is located on the Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, and Android TV. Blue Fathoms TV is the place for vintage movies, television shows, and cartoons from a bygone era. You can also find us on the internet at www.blue6tv.com and on Facebook at Blue Fathoms Television. Enjoy Academy Award-winning films featuring legendary actors. So please stop by and catch our programming as we are always updating. Blue Fathoms Television on the Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, and Android TV platforms.
Welcome back. This is the Turning Point podcast. Our guest tonight, Attorney John Runyon.
Thank you, Ken. And John, thank you very much for coming on the podcast and giving us some insights. So we started off talking about your background as a police officer. And I wanted to spend a little bit more time on that. That's why we spent the first two segments on that, especially considering the fact that our police today are under fire, for lack of a better word, from all kinds of people wanting to defund the police and, you know, hold back the police. Yeah, I mean, you know, you got bad policemen, you got bad doctors, you got bad pharmacists, you got back, you know, bad everybody in every profession. I believe, Ken, you have a question that you wanted to ask John.
Yeah, John, at the beginning of the show, we had mentioned that you've actually presented in front of the United States Supreme Court. And most people's experience in that is what they see on TV. But actually being there, can you share with us some anecdote or little known fact or something interesting that kind of gives us a better handle on what that's like?
Well, number one, you have to understand that you're presenting before these justices, and they have read your argument, the other side's argument, any amicus brief argument that has come in, and an amicus brief is a friend of the court brief on the case, and you're all set to present, and you may get maybe a minute of your presentation in before you're actually being peppered with questions about the case, about, you know, the issues at hand. And you see the justices grappling with the issues and the facts and the law. And you try to answer the questions in the very, you know, as the very best you can. But sometimes you find yourself going, ooh, I never thought of that. And then in your mind, you're trying to run through the steps. So it's a very heady experience. That's what I will I will say about it. I never in my whole life, well, let me rephrase, if somebody came up to me 20 years ago and said, John, you're going to be sworn in before the Supreme Court of the United States one day. And John, you know, I would have looked at him and said, yeah, and Elgin State has an interesting coat that I want you to put on, and we'll just kind of button it up on the back.
So. John, the U.S. Supreme Court, anything interesting, anything funny about it that you remember when you visited over there?
Well, you know, one of the things, and I don't know how many people know, but there's a basketball court above the Supreme Court chambers. Huh. So you're not allowed to play basketball during the actual period of time when the Supreme Court is hearing argument or rendering their decisions. That would be kind of rude. But there is a full basketball court upstairs. I never knew that until I was given my first tour of the Supreme Court. And, you know, they took us up and here's the basketball court. And I was like,
well, it's wow. It's good to know that there's a court above the Supreme Court also. That is the beauty of our country, folks. There's a court above the court, the Supreme Court.
Okay. That's a higher court, Mohammed. That's a higher court.
But, you know, considering the fact that most of the Supreme Court judges are, you know, not really in the best shape of their life or, you know, health-wise, do you think these guys actually go up and play there?
Well, somebody puts a, you know, basketball in their hand, and everybody has the tendency to want to, you know, shoot around and shoot it. And me personally, I don't know of any of the justices that have done it. I haven't seen it, but it wouldn't surprise me if some of the justices don't go up and shoot around a little bit if they, you know, physically capable of doing it.
Well, some of them have brooms, right? Okay. I'm thinking of Harry Potter now. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. So, I don't know about that. So yeah,
them flying around with the ropes flapping in the wind and basketball in their hand.
Yeah.
Well, folks, our guest tonight on the podcast is Attorney John Runyon. He started off his career as a police officer, and I spent quite some time discussing the policing aspect of John's life, especially in light of the challenges being faced by policemen currently now in our police forces and our law enforcement forces. And coming back now to the flip side of John's life now, John, what was the turning point in your policing career that one day you said, okay, when I retire, I'm going to continue by getting into law enforcement as an attorney? What was that decision point like? When did you make that decision?
Well, here's the thing that you have to understand. I went back to school. When I became a police officer, I had 15 hours of college credit from William Rainey Harper College. And back then, you didn't need a college degree to become a police officer like most departments require today. I had a high school diploma, nothing else. But as a police officer, in 1981, while working the street, I interrupted an armed robbery and was shot in the process. And knock on wood, I was able to heal up and go back to work. And the offender was captured, tried, convicted. But at that time, when I was laying in bed, I was doing calculations as to what my pay would be if I couldn't go back to work. And I realized that I was woefully equipped for trying to do something outside of the police department if I couldn't go back to work, because I just didn't have the education. So with all of that in mind, I became a man on a mission and completed two associate's degrees, a bachelor's degree, and a Juris Doctorate in law in 8 years while continuing my police career, going full time to school in the evenings and going and working full time as a police officer. So I became very cognizant of the possibility of not being able to go back to the police force because of my injuries. And I needed to ensure for my family that I would be able to provide for them.
Okay, great. And I guess with your policing background, it makes it more easy for you to understand the situation from both sides now, right?
Yeah, it does for me, because I still utilize the skills and the training that I received as a police officer when I'm sitting down and then I'm looking at a new case for the first time, and I'm looking for the facts, and I'm thinking about the law as how it applies to the facts. And I've been fortunate to be able to have a tremendous amount of training through the police department that I've been able to use in my legal career since 1994, when I was sworn in.
So when, as a police officer, now, if you are in a situation of cross-examining, as an attorney, if you're in a position of cross-examining a police officer, does anything click in empathy-wise that you're going to take it a little bit light on this guy?
No. You have as a police officer, you have a duty to follow the rules and follow the law, just as well as a lawyer has a duty to follow the rules and follow the law. But the lawyer is also required to zealously represent his client at all times. So you cannot have, and I think having sympathy for the police officer is kind of a bad way to put it. But you can't lighten up on the officer if you suspect that something went wrong on this matter, and you have to get to the bottom of it. So no, you don't go light on the police officers. You ask your questions based on what you've read in the police reports, what your client has told you, what video evidence has been disclosed, what audio evidence has been disclosed, and you try and hone your defense as well as can be expected based on all the information that you're provided. And then you have to bring out all of that information in court before the judge or before a judge and a jury. So no, you don't get to go light on the officers. Now, it doesn't mean that it is like it is on TV. Very rarely do you have lawyers yelling at officers and arguments occurring, because the judges won't tolerate that in their courtroom, because there is a decorum requirement. But doesn't mean that you do not zealously represent your client in front of the bench.
Now, when you are arguing in front of a local judge, what do you have to keep in mind as far as your behavior in the courtroom? Can you get aggressive? Do you have to be respectful? Obviously, you have to be respectful, but can you be aggressive in front of the local judges and not get mistreated?
Well, you can be aggressive in front of a judge to a certain extent, but you also, you know, act with deference to the court at all times. I mean, we still inherited our legal system from England when we came across. And one of the first things that we do when we start a trial is we state to the judge, may it please the court, because we are about to address the court, and that's the respectful way to do it. And that's, we still carry that forward in every trial. May we, you know, may it please the court, and you introduce yourself and you do that in front of a jury. They will hear that. In the 20 some odd years that I've been practicing in court, and I've done trials, the first words out of my my mouth when the trial starts is, may it please the court.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John. And folks, you are tuned in to the Turning Point podcast. I am your host, Muhammad Fahim. Our guest on the podcast tonight, John Runyon, former police officer, police sergeant, and practicing attorney now. And we have had some wonderful discussions today about the challenges faced by a police officer. And then again, when you become an attorney and you're on the other side of the fence, so to speak, the challenges that you face in that situation. John, thank you very much. I guess we are about out of time on our discussion tonight. We'd love to have you back to continue the conversation as we progress. Any final thoughts before I let you go?
The only final thought is, you know, I thank both you and Ken for inviting me on to the show. My final thought being that police officers have an exceedingly hard job to do, and they try every day to go out there and do it the very best way they can. And I am so proud to say that I have been a police officer, and all of the various shields that I've worn on my uniform and the different hats that I've worn on my head have all been worn with the utmost of honor and respectability because I became a police officer. So thank you for the time. Bringing me on the show, Mr. Fahim, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you very much for joining us, folks. This is the Turning Point Podcast, and Ken would walk you out of the podcast for tonight.
Well, thank you again, John Runyon, attorney at large, and that was a great show you did. Learned a lot today. This is the Turning Point Podcast. You can get the podcast from theturningpointpodcast.com. And very shortly, we will be expanding into everywhere where you can get a podcast. That'll be coming up very soon. If you would like to leave a message, a voicemail, our phone number is 312-866-7174. Or if you just go on to the turningpointpodcast.com, there's a space to leave us comments. You have suggestions for future guests, something that keeps you up at night you'd like to have us discuss, please share. We would love to make this your podcast. Until next time, have a great day.